You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Well, hello, Steve.
Oh, good morning.
Hey, Steve, for those who haven't come across you online, introduce yourself. And what are we going to be talking about today?
My name is Dr. Steve Luke, pharmacist. I've been practicing for about 35 years now. And currently, I'm CEO of a company called Audible RX. We provide consumer medication information in an easy-to-listen audio format, trying to help the current state of health literacy in our nation. I've written quite a bit. I've found my pen and have put in quite a few articles at Pharmacy Times and have recently ventured off into my own blog space.
I don't think I even know what the word literacy means. Is it reading or understanding, or what does it actually mean?
When someone comes into the store and they pick up their prescription bottle, we're assuming when they walk out that they're going to be able to look at that label and have an understanding of what they're supposed to do. Even though we spend time talking with them at the counter, when they get home, they're going to look at that bottle and they're going to see their name on there. And there's going to be a set of directions. We want to make sure that they understand what those directions mean. You know, when it says take 2 tablets a day, is that once in the morning, once in the evening? Do I have it with food? Do I not have it with food? And, you know, our nation has this program that over the last 30 years, we've been required to hand out consumer medication information sheets with each and every prescription. Each state has their own specific nuances to that rule. However, that's the education that the patients get, aside from their communication with their healthcare provider. And over the years, you practicing independent pharmacy, me practicing independent pharmacy, we know that the vast majority of these retail establishments that are out there putting prescriptions out, whether it's mail order or whether it's a big chain store, or the pharmacist does not always have time to communicate with their patient. And so the idea to know that the patient is understanding the medication is few and far between. Nationally, a few years back, there was a study that showed that 36% of the population of the United States is either at or below literacy levels. So that means that they can't read, or they have a very difficult time reading or understanding material.
Literacy is based around reading and understanding what you read, right? I can maybe sound out some Spanish or something because I know the rules, but I don't understand it.
That sounds perfect. Exactly. Knowing what you're reading, not only knowing what you're reading, but having a general understanding of what that means. And then when you take that and combine it with health, it's, you know, health literacy is an understanding of your health and being able to be in the position where you make appropriate decisions based upon that understanding. So someone, you know, at a general level of health literacy is being able to, number one, know what your diagnosis is, or diagnoses if you have more than one. Number two, knowing what your treatment plan is. What did your doctor or pharmacist or nurse practitioner tell you that you're going to do to treat your current diagnoses? And number three, understanding those treatments. How do you go about following through on the treatments that were given to you? So I understandably, based upon the national levels, there's at least 36% of the population out there that can't do that.
And so where did this interest start, Steve, with you? The business guy in me is always going to say, how can I start things as a business? I don't follow through on those. I just think from the business side, how did that start as a business? For you, the chicken and the egg, were you saying, hey, I should do Audible and who can I do this for? Or was it, hey, I see people that are not understanding this. Where did your start in this come from?
Yeah, that's a super good question, because you're right. And I suppose this is probably the case. Those who know how to start businesses do it because they see a financial gain from it, and they're able to put in a model and boom, another year or two later, they've got a profit out of it. This wasn't necessarily that type of a business. July of 2011, I clearly remember this. I was in our little store, you know, an outpatient pharmacy on campus at a community hospital. Patients are coming and going all the time because they're seeing doctors in the clinic. They walk by, they look in, they see, oh, there's a pharmacist. I have a question. Let's go talk to him. And so they walk in. And I always start with, well, I understand you have a question. You fill your prescriptions at this other store. They have your profile. You should really utilize your pharmacist. I 100% of the time try to promote the development of a relationship with your pharmacist. That's first and foremost. Have your pharmacist available so you can talk to them. So anyway, this happened one time. Patient came in. They were asking about Novodex, and they had been to their pharmacy, picked up the prescription. The pharmacist was too busy to ask any questions, so they just picked up the prescription and left. They didn't have a consult. So I discussed this with them. I got their information to transfer their other medications over to our store and start taking care of them as a patient. And then I went through the answers to their medication, and that like clicked. It's like, wow, wouldn't it be great if there was a spot where patients could go to a trusted site developed by a pharmacist where they could go to and hear all of the required counseling elements necessary for that particular medication. Fully 100% with the idea that that counseling would not replace the pharmacist discussion. It would stimulate a conversation so the patient has a clear idea of what they do and don't know about the medications, and ideally then take appropriate questions back to their own healthcare provider, trying to empower the patient to engage in their own care. Patients engage in their own care, they're going to have a better outcome of therapy. Clear and simple. They know why they're taking it. And importantly, the what are the consequences if I don't take my medication? That's where it came from. And from that point, what was interesting, at that point, I went home that night. I got on the computer and I did research. I wanted to find out if there is any audio presentation out there that did this. I looked and looked and looked, couldn't find anything anywhere. And what it did is it led me to researching what consumer medication information is, where it comes from, the long story of the FDA and their requirement for consumer medication information. And there it was, you know, it's a boring long story. I've written about that, and that's out there and available. I don't want to talk about that.
When you made this, were you thinking for a more homey approach, or did you think right off the bat that there might be some people that can't read?
So right off the bat, Mike, what I thought was these consumer medication information sheets that we hand out to patients. These sheets are complicated. At best, they're complicated. And patients take a look at them and they quickly scan through maybe to what they want to look at, or they look at it and they see that there's way too many words. They're specifically written to cover the legal requirements of the institution handing them out. And to take that paper and record that paper sounds like the dictionary. And so my take on it was to create a quote unquote plain language document, not specifically geared to any grade level. I didn't want to pigeonhole it, but what I wanted to do was to create a document that, number one, covered all of those required elements that the FDA encourages writers of consumer medication information to have in the document. There's an outline that the FDA puts out that says these are the elements that should be in the CMI document, right? And so I created my own template, and then from non-copyright protected material would take that information, put it into the document, and record it. And yes, specifically, my thought was, yeah, there's an element of people out there who have difficulty understanding these documents. There's a difficult, there are patients out there who can't read because their eyesight is difficult. And so that was initially my first thought, was those are the people that I want to get with this. And I'm going to build this and put it out there. And if at some point in time someone wants to pick it up and pay for it, buy it from me, that's great. But in the meantime, I'm just going to fill this need. And by doing it that way, it allowed me to continue working on it. I didn't have, number one, I didn't invest a bunch of money in it. All I was doing was putting hours and hours and hours of my time into it. Time from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. in the morning. So it wasn't getting in anyone's way. I wasn't taking away from family time. I was able to do this on my own. After doing it and putting it out there, the feedback that I was getting back from friends, from people who were using it, is that this is a very useful document to have, a very useful product to have for those that are literate, for those that fall in the top 50%, because it still meets all of those specific needs, and it's not talking down to anyone. It's just talking plain language.
Well, that's interesting, because you talk about the literacy, and earlier my thoughts were going to people that can't read. But a lot of people, in a way, if they're looking at these FDA sheets, is anybody literate when they're reading these if it's not broken down into plain English? I mean, your audience really could be like 90% of the population instead of just 36% of the population, you know, because I think we all can have it broken down a little bit better.
Oh, of course. I totally agree. I mean, so in general, think about your audience. You have patients who come into your store on a regular basis, and they're given, I'm sure that your pharmacists, you or your staff, always spends time counseling with them, the new prescriptions as they come through. If they had an invitation when they got home, rather than having that document that they have to go and read through, or that you're required to give them when they go home with their new prescription, if they also had this invitation to follow up on the AudibleRx website. If you have any questions, take a look at this right here, just as an extra bit of information. They can go through that, and then after you listen to that, give me a call. Let me know if you have any questions about what you heard. I'd love to go over it with you. What I have found is that patients, once they have listened to it, they have such a better understanding. And it's just a one-time through. It's not something that people would go back to. It's not designed that someone's going to go back to on a regular basis as a reference. It's designed as a once-and-done type of a product where they will go through it one time, get a good general understanding of start to finish, how it works, what it's supposed to be doing, what the consequences are of not taking it, that type of thing.
If you gave a pharmacist a choice to say, talk to this person for about a minute or read through this page for 4 minutes and make it as your voice can be as interesting as you want it to be, but every pharmacist would say, oh, I'm going to pick the 30-second one or the minute one. That's all people are ready for at a given time. Talk to me about the business side of things, because I've got a lot of stuff that's brewing. I haven't monetized the podcast. You know, it's hard to when you have 3 listeners.
But that's me, you, and someone else, right?
It's usually my next week's guest, and then I listen to it, and my dog Lady in the car. So that brings us up to 3. But, you know,
sure,
there's stuff I've done. Like, I've got this group on LinkedIn, the Independent Pharmacist Owners. I've had that since 2009, and that's at about 10,000 people. I haven't done anything with that. I'm just kind of grouping these things up where eventually some of these puzzle pieces might fit together. They might not. But talk to me about AudibleRx. We talked about where the thoughts started. Where did they go to right away after this started, and where are they now with AudibleRx?
To cover the history of it rather quickly, I built a website on my own. I wrote and recorded about 200 sessions of the top medications. Currently, we're at 300 sessions, and the idea is we have the top 80 to 85% of the medications that go out any regular community pharmacy. So that's our current library, and we have it in Spanish, and I've started to do it in Vietnamese. I have it in the written format in Vietnamese. After 4 or 5 years of doing it, I realized I wasn't going to get anywhere on my own. I needed to get some help. I got a partner. She was a lady who I'd worked with for 15 years in pharmacy, and she had just retired and was ready to invest a little bit. And we came together, joined forces, and that was about 3 or 4 years ago. We got our team together, built a new website, got the sessions professionally recorded, and took it on the road to a pharmacy seminar. Incredibly well received. However, no one was ready to pick it up yet because they wanted it integrated into their computer system, into their hospital electronic health record. Over the next year, I had 5 big pitches. We'd pitched to Rite Aid, Blue Shield, Dignity Health, Sutter Health, and First Data Bank. And every one of them thought this was a fantastic idea. They loved the concept. All of them wanted to show that it was, in fact, ready to be integrated into the electronic health record and had studies showing that, yes, in fact, it is improving patient health literacy, that it is decreasing readmissions. The idea in the pitch is that with Audible RX, we're going to affect that a little bit. Even if we move it 1% or 2%, we're going to make it an impact on the cost. And then with retail, you know, DIR fees, right? The direct indirect remuneration are the bane of our existence. We do not like DIR fees. 2015, retail pharmacy paid $23 billion in DIR fees. Bam, that is a huge number. And the idea that with adherence to medication, a percentage of adherence is patients understanding their medications, right? Okay. And so if we could address that percent of the population who is non-adherent because they don't understand their medications, not just because they forget to take their dose or because they, you know, for whatever other reason, we address that they're not adherent. And now adherence is addressed many different ways. The majority of the ways that we address adherence are medication apps that tell us when to take it, bubble packing, pill boxes, all of those things. The other side of it, though, is education. The education of understanding. And there's a couple of studies out there that show that it makes a difference, that when people understand their medications, it makes a difference and they take them more regularly. So that $23 billion, if we moved that 1%, that's a lot of money. So those were my pitches, right? They loved it. Even First Data Bank, I talked to them. They said, this is a great product. Maybe we'll do it ourselves. thanks for the idea. Honestly, though, their take on it was they loved the product. They said, but if we integrated your product in with our product, we would have to go through each and every session and vet it to make sure it fit exactly with the material that we have on our database already. And they go, we're not going to do that. And they said, there's no reason for us to do an audio format for it. We're getting plenty of traction on our written product right now. Business model doesn't show the need for it. No one's going to pay for it. So those were our pitches. We then went to, you know, and so the hospitals, the retail settings, they wanted it plug and play, integrated, ready to go.
When they talk about integration, do you mean like the hospital was saying where they had to make sure that it lined up with their information? Or do you mean more of technology-wise they wanted it more integrated, like on their own screen or something, right?
Yeah, technology-wise, they want it integrated with the, you know how some of the your pharmacy software has programs integrated in. First Data Bank, you type up a prescription, the paper prints out automatically.
They wanted it to come out as a QR code or something?
Yeah, it would either come out as a barcode or it would come out as a, you know, I could give them a plug and play. I don't know what this means. You know, I'm being not much of a techie myself. The idea that you could type the prescription and a link is sent to their phone automatically. So they click on it and listen to it.
Some integration to make it easy for people.
And so that cost a lot of money. I went to investors that some investors really loved this and were ready to give us some funding. However, they don't like the fact that I'm a full-time employee at a hospital, right? They don't want to give me $1 million to start working on a project if I am not 100% doing that project. Okay. And that was fine. I totally got it. That makes sense. I could go out and hire someone to be that person, but my partner and I looked at it and we thought, you know what? Our mission here is to provide this education at no charge to patients. We want patients to be able to have this. So a year and a half ago, we regrouped. We got two other people to work with us. One's a pharmacist, one's a marketing agent, and both of them are very closely related to us, and they are in the millennial group set, so they understand tech much better than my partner and I do. And one of them helped me design the project, a project implementer. She pushed it all the way through, which was amazing. And the other one actually built the website. And 6 months ago, we launched our new upgraded, very easy to use website. And what we are doing now, our business model at this point in time, moving forward, is grassroots. I, on a daily basis, contact people on LinkedIn and invite them to sign our terms and agreement paper so they can use Audible Rx in their practice at no charge. Use it as an education tool for their patients. And we want that to keep rolling forward. We want to slowly increase our user base. We want to see, you know, right now we have 2,000 people using it each month throughout the world. We want to get that to 5,000 people a day in order to make a difference. Once we get to a certain level, then we can show that our product has value, that it is making a difference in a large amount of people. And at that point in time, a larger company is going to look at it and say, hey, okay, we are in need of having our own database, our own library of consumer medication information for our patient population. This looks like a really good product. We want it. And we're going to say, okay, good. What do you, you know, let's make a deal. But until that point comes along, which it will, our idea is to just keep working at it, building sessions as necessary and promoting it and getting out in front of people. Our latest venture, and this is something good. So my invitation here, since I have a forum, is any pharmacist out there, any institution who would like to use this as an education resource for their patients. We have a simple terms and agreement paper, check a couple boxes and sign it and send it back to us. And then we will help you promote it within your practice, however necessary. And if you like, we're gathering collaborative partners where we will post your logo on our page as a collaborative partner in favor of increasing health literacy. And in return, you post our logo on your page showing that you're using our product.
I think so many pharmacies can relate to the fact that in business, one of the lessons there is you keep moving daily. And people will say, well, no, Mike, anybody can just move. You have to make progress. It's like, I know that. But there's also just value in moving. It seems to keep grease on the gears, you know? It's a big thing.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah, you have shown that in what you do. You have to have some goals that you're setting. And you have to be able to meet those on a regular basis or at least review them on a regular basis. I like to say where I am right now, I'm 9.5 years into my 10-year overnight success.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's the truth. Starting something like this, you know, 10 years ago is quite a feat.
Well, it's the idea of maintaining passion in order to continue doing it. And that to me, you know, prior to that, I'd always been looking for the thing that's going to keep me going. What will my legacy be? What am I going to continue to do throughout the years? And this stuck. You know, I put it out there. I started doing it. 6 months later, I'm looking at myself, wow, this is still happening.
Yeah.
And so you were talking about how to get it out there, how to monetize, you know, your three listeners that you have. How do we make that seven?
Yeah.
And what I did in 2014 or 2015, sometime around there, reading all that I could about how to get people to look at my website. And I didn't want to pay. I didn't want to pay anyone advertising. And so the idea was blogging. That was the number one way to try to get people to look at my website. And then the question comes to how much, how often, what am I supposed to do? And the general consensus is twice a week. And so what I did beginning December or January 1st, 2014 or 15, I'm not sure, I started a blog page. And I made a commitment to myself for the next 52 weeks, I'm going to post twice a week. And I was surprised that there was always a topic. There was always something to talk about. And throughout that time, my following grew and grew and grew, which was really nice. I appreciated that. And it also stimulated this process of, wow, okay, as time went by, my writing got a little bit better, a little bit more interesting, a little bit less fact and a little bit more story. And at the end of that, into that time frame, I thought, well, I kind of like this. I'd like to continue on doing this a little bit because it seems to work. And there was at that time and I'm not sure if you're familiar with this site, a gentleman, I forget what his name is, but he runs a site called RXE Consult. And he has a forum for healthcare professionals who want to be published, who haven't put it out there anymore. They sign up with him, and it's kind of like a Strava for or Facebook for people who want to put write articles. They sign up, they put their article on, and you can post your own articles to here. So I did that for about a year. Signed up with him, and you know, once every month I would post an article, and I would put a little more time into it than I would the blogs. And then for my blog post, I would just link it to that. After doing that for about a year, a friend, an online associate who I had worked with in the past, and I think you've interviewed him before, Alex Barker.
Yes, Alex, right.
He sent me a note and said, "Hey, Steve, Pharmacy Times is looking for some pharmacists who write to increase their viewership." And I thought, okay, this sounds like a good opportunity. And so I put my hat in the ring, and they said, okay, sure. If you're willing to give us a couple articles a month on a regular basis, then we'd be happy to review them and post them if we would like them. And so I started in on that, and this was actually making money. You know, we would get paid for them, which was something totally new to me, the concept of, you know, writing and getting paid for doing that. I did that for about 18 to 20 months or so, and it was really enjoyable. And I was amazed at how much viewership the articles got. And they also allowed me to put a bio that had my link to my website. So that was more publicity. That was good. And that increased Audible Rex's following as well.
You've got a lot of articles in there, Steve. How many did you put in Pharmacy Times?
There are. I looked the other day just to check for this, and there was between 80 and 100. I forget the exact number, but I was just going down. Lots of different topics.
I was looking at it, and typically when someone says they've been in the magazine, it's like, you know, you're going to look at a few, 3-4 articles, something like that. But there's a ton of them.
At the end of my time doing that, I wanted to have my own material. I had all of these different thoughts and ideas building up that were not really Pharmacy Times material, and they had changed their structure on how they remunerated you for your time. And I decided to take it elsewhere. So I created my own space about a year and a half or 2 years ago called Viewpoint RX, and I try to get myself to put a story down at least once every 4 to 6 weeks or so. And the idea of my current space is that everyone has major impactful stories that have happened in their life, right? These different things that we've come across, that we've done, some of them touching, some of them funny, all of them, when you sit and meditate on it for a while, somehow many of them can be related back to the pharmacy world one way, shape, or form.
Probably about 5 years ago, I did a similar thing for the business. I wanted to blog a little bit. And so I said I was going to do 100. And when I was done, I was going to stop. I knew that I was starting to get close mentally, that I had to stop around 100. And I ended up splitting those up, and they were about 50 personal, 50 business. And I put them into a little collection of each. One value I have from that is, if you ask someone to write an article on a drug, you know, on Accutane or something like that, it's obvious that they would then learn a lot more from it, even though the information's out there. But just the fact of them organizing it and putting it into paragraphs and so on, they're going to learn a ton from it. But I think that these lessons that you have on the Viewpoint RX, it's amazing how clear those become in your head once you've had to think of that for 2 or 3 days. Life lessons by thinking of it and verbalizing it and writing about things like that, that if you didn't have that, you wouldn't capture those thoughts as well. And those would not become lessons to somebody else because you haven't even sorted it out in your own head yet.
I totally agree. That's 100% correct. And being able to have the opportunity to do that is a blessing. Given the time to sit and think through those processes and the willingness to participate in it and share it out there, and the conversation that you get because of that is nothing but growth.
You mentioned Audible RX, about something to put your stamp on, and you talk about these blog posts and stuff like that. for me, I think deep down has something to do with legacy, you know, of being able to share. I want people to know a little bit of me maybe when I'm gone. I don't know. I just feel like maybe as humans, creating humans, some of us want to leave stuff behind. How much do you think about that? Like this stuff is handed on as your wisdom, or doesn't it go that far?
100%. Everything you said, yes. I love the fact that both my kids, they're 27 and 29 right now, that both of them love to participate in my life and understand what's going on and have a deep understanding of where I've been and what I've gone through and where I've come to, as well as my wife. And you touch on a real key point of legacy and kids and what our life is meant to be, that type of stuff. So when my kids were 3 and 5 years old, I turned myself into the State Board of Pharmacy and my supervisor because I was using drugs. I was stealing drugs from work. I was using drugs. I was drinking, and I needed help. And I had a, I had an immense spiritual awakening that happened when I was at church one day. I still went to church every week, even though I was going through this stuff. And the priest, I felt like, was looking straight at me and saying, okay, you know, after the sermon that he had given, it related to going home and dealing with the one thing that has been on your mind forever that you're not taking care of. Go home and take care of it today. And that was like a, that was the burning bush, right? I went home, told my wife that, look, this is what's going on. She didn't know. She knew that something was crazy because our life had been in turmoil for the last 2 or 3 years. But I was a highly productive healthcare professional, working a lot of hours, maintaining a home, you know, what all intents and purposes looked like living the dream on the outside. And I went home, told her, we called my boss. He said, okay, Steve, thank you. I said, if you need to call the police and have them arrest me, do it. Whatever you need to do. I just can't do this anymore. And he said, no, we're going to call the State Board of Pharmacy, the recovery program. We got a hold of the State Board of Pharmacy recovery program. And the next day I was in a 28-day treatment facility. Saved my life. And when I was in there, the first night I was in there, groups of people bring 12-step meetings into these recovery programs, at least the one that I was at. And the one that came in the first day was one of our local physicians. I knew him. He told his story, how he, you know, his experience, what had happened, his strength, what he had gotten from the program, and his hope where he was going to. And I looked at that and I thought, oh, this is how you stop. I had no idea how to stop using. It just wasn't, you know, how to stop drinking and how to stop using. It wasn't in my skill set. I had tried many times for a day, 2 days, 2 hours, and it just wasn't happening. I learned the tools. There are tools. Talk about toolbox. That's full of these recovery tools. My kids knew from the get-go. By the time my daughter was in third grade and she was having these DARE programs at school, you know, where they come in and they talk about drugs and stuff, she would come home and she would interview me. She would interview her dad about, you know, who, you know, about what it was like to take drugs, what it was like to drink, what it was, you know, these different things, and then go back to school and be able to answer all the questions appropriately. My understanding of this process is that kids need to understand everything that we're going through. In my opinion, the idea of sequestering or secluding them from the truth does not help growth. Them understanding the truth and understanding what we're going through when they're old enough to understand it, you know, that's a parenting prerogative. When they're old enough to understand different things, different more is revealed. But the they look forward to the articles that I write that are deep and involved and include troubles that I have gone through or growth that I have had. They always are excited about it when it comes out. They go right to reading it and love commenting or sharing back and having conversation about it. I wasn't sure if I was going to practice again, so I picked up started going to a program to become a certified drug and addiction counselor. And it was a year-long certification program. And once I, just as I was completing that program, and that was an amazing program that it helped open up, and along with state mandated therapy and group sessions with other doctors and pharmacists, this really helped me understand where it came from. The whole, not just how to live without taking drugs and alcohol, but where did it come from? How did I get to this point? What was going on in my life from when I was born until now that brought me to this point here? It allowed me to move forward and see that, yes, I'm still a good person. I can still practice pharmacy really well, and I have a lot to offer to this world. And with that, a position opened up at our local community hospital just before I graduated this addiction counseling program. I applied for it, went in, talked to them, and from the get-go, I sat down and said, look, here's my story. This is what I've been through, and here's where I am today, and this is what I hope to do if you hire me. And they were like, okay, that's good. We trust you. Come on in. We'll give you a chance. That was 24 years ago.
The time that you remember your first thoughts, there's some ingredient why you were abusing drugs and escaping and things like that. I imagine that's a lifetime.
In short, for me, it was all about people pleasing. And that pendulum, the pendulum that swings back and forth. On one side, I, from the get-go, being the youngest of eight, and having all of these elder siblings that are just so excited to see you and want to know how you're doing, and oh yeah, you're going straight to college, that type of thing. You know, I wanted to please people because it felt really good. But then on the other side of it, I realized that no, I don't want to please people. I want to escape. And this alcohol really helps me hide from people. It helps me escape those feelings that I need to perform really well. And that does nothing but grow as time goes on. And, you know, before I knew it, I'm, you know, performing well in high school, doing good, senior class president and honor roll. And at the same time, you know, getting drunk on weekends every time. And then once I got into college, it was the same thing. I did really well in school. I was participating in state pharmacy organizations. I was participating in the student counseling programs. On the other side of it, the weekend partying was just increasing and increasing. And then you bring it into the professional world and you think, you know, as a healthcare professional, I've got it all under control. As long as I'm still showing up for work, as long as my clothes are washed and I'm getting dressed and I'm bringing money home and buying a house and raising kids, it's all fine. I got it under control. Don't worry about it. Whereas on the other side, I'm volunteering for more to stay late. I'm coming in early. I'm taking on extra tasks just to show all these people that, look, I've got it all under control. When in fact, on the other side of it, it's just increasing and getting stronger and stronger. And, you know, it's in those situations, people are either going to get caught up in a lie and get caught by the authorities because they've drunk driving or stolen something or something, or they're going to kill themselves. Inadvertently.
You and I talked a little bit before the show, and we're both number eight child. I'm 8 of 12, and you're 8 of 8, and it's practically worse for you because you're the youngest. I was the youngest boy. I can appreciate that, of being the one that people look to. For me, it wasn't so much smart, but it was being a kind of a clown around the family. I wasn't necessarily a clown in life, but around the family, you know, I could make them laugh, you know, and most of it is stuff you can't repeat on the air here.
Right.
Not because it's filthy, it's just childish, you know, childish stuff that you can try to get a laugh from. But it became where you almost became two separate people, the tears of a clown, you know, or something, where
sure.
In your case, it was the tears of someone who was being productive and straight and narrow and leadership and things like that. Merging those together, the true Steve with the outward Steve, it's just hard to become that one person that for the first 25 years of your life, it was almost like two split people.
You're right. And it's, and what I learned and what I can do now is be present with my wife be present with my kids. And this has been the gift of the last 25 years, is that when something happens, when something critical happens at home, Steve's present. We don't, they don't have to worry if I'm going to be here or not. I'm there. And if something happens at work, you know, I'm there also at that point in time. There's an authenticity to being present and not needing to think back in your brain, what did I tell him last time? Because I want to make sure I tell him the same story this next time. And I stick to that storyline. If all that you're doing is telling the truth, if all that you'd have is integrity as you move forward, then you don't even have to think about it, because you know that what you told them last time is going to be the same as what you tell them this time, because you're pulling from the same spot inside of you that has that same authentic, true story. And that takes away so much stress and so much angst out of your life that it allows you to focus and be more clear and present with what's going on in front of you today. It's incredibly, I mean, a lot of people already know this because they weren't born as drug addicts and alcoholics, but myself, it was something brand new to me. This concept of being able to be present.
When you say present and being telling the truth, does that mean physically, or are you talking more about your feelings are true?
Both on all levels. The idea of being present is that when I'm sitting with someone like you today, I'm not thinking about everything else I need to go do. I'm here with you, and you've got my attention. I can carry that over to time with my wife. When I'm sitting with her, she's got my attention. I'm not worried about what's going on over here or over here, or stuff at work, or because I know all that's where it's supposed to be. I'm here with her at that moment in time. And that isn't something that I always knew how to do.
Was that because you were covering your tracks in the snow, or that was a challenge that you had of focusing?
I don't think it was much of a challenge I had with focusing. I think it was covering my tracks, but it was also not worrying what other people are thinking about me. And for such a long time, that's what I grew up with. All of these older siblings, me being concerned, me wanting to present myself to them in an appropriate light because I adore them, and concerned what they would think about me. And then I carry that through to school, and everyone's judging you. And I didn't have the tools to not care what they thought about me, so I tried to meet their expectations.
Yes.
And when I went to work, I tried to meet their expectations and exceed their expectations.
So I always came in as the pleaser. So I was pleasing everybody because that was my way to motivate them. And pretty soon, I truly created two different people. I finally kind of broke down and got some professional help in merging those two people together. My outside and my inside is getting closer to one.
What I hear from you, and what I think is a real important message you're saying, is number one, the merging of these two, this side and this side, is bringing you more closely together to be the authentic Mike. That's our authenticity. That's what we want to show through, is our authenticity. The inside and the outside look the same. We walk the walk, we talk the talk. If someone sees us, they're seeing who really is here. They're not seeing a persona projecting something else. They're really seeing the person who's here. This is what you get. Second thing is, there is help. And no matter how strong we are, strong we think we are, or no matter how damaged we think we might be, it helps to talk to someone, to start that step of seeking a therapist, talking to a counselor, asking an employee assistance program, whatever that may be. I've never met anyone who has come out the other side of going to therapy thinking, oh, that was a waste of time, that didn't do any good. It's always a benefit to it. And that's a strong message. What it makes you do is it makes you face yourself. You have to look at it. There has to be some sort of willingness to walk through that door and to participate. But that's there. That's a really good thing.
There's a lot of help, whether it's medicinal help, therapy help, reading, support groups, whatever. And one thing I'm happy about now is that I know where that support is, and I'm still using a good portion of that. And so I feel actually safer now because I know where my net is. And when I think back to the pharmacist that gave you his trust when you had just gotten out of, therapy and so on, that I think people know that. They're like, well, you're maybe the last person I'm concerned with now because you know the tools that are there. You've got that safety net.
So what I like about that is bringing that full circle back around to where we are today, working in a pharmacy, talking with people, is those tools that I got from the treatment program, from the year-long course on drug and alcohol counseling. I utilize those every day in my practice. I have patients who come to me in the county. They come to me in our pharmacy specifically because they know that I'm going to keep them on track with their controlled substances. We have patients who at least once a week, they are early on their refills. You know, I mean, we get that all the time. You know what that works. Anyway, many times they'll just slightly open the door a little bit by saying, well, what am I going to do? That's an invitation to me to share with them a little bit about, yeah, there is hope. We can work on this. There's many different ways that we can proceed. Many physicians that I work with know my story. And so they will refer patients to me specifically so that I can work with them in my short, 2 or 5 minute counseling sessions at the counter.
A lot of pharmacists have a big heart, but someone who's been through what you've been through, I don't know, maybe has like a little bit more of an easy path to the heart to get to other people. You've been there and done that. That's quite a gift that you can bring out of your road that you've traveled. So thank you for all you do.
Yeah, I appreciate that. These ideas, I can't encourage enough for young pharmacists to, number one, get on LinkedIn, put yourself out there, start connecting with people. Number two, start writing a blog, especially pharmacy students. Pick the topics that you're interested in. Once a month, put it out there, write about it, try to connect with people, create your online presence. And then when you have an idea that's got some legs, pick it up and walk forward with it. We have so many pharmacists who are so incredibly clinically fantastic. They know their stuff inside and out. They work really fast. They're sharp. They're clear. But they don't necessarily take their ideas, package them up, and present them to someone else and try to move forward with it. And that's what I encourage, is taking those ideas, packaging them, trying to find out who you present it to and move forward with it. You know, be that person who steps out of the box.
I don't think you can emphasize that enough, of getting that stuff down in writing. Even if it's not widely disseminated yet, you have taken a thought and put it on paper and packaged it into something that's coherent. And once you make it coherent for someone else, what you're really doing is making it coherent for yourself.
Yeah.
Steve, really fascinating stuff. Keep up the fight. Way to go.
Mike, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And you as well.
God bless. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.